Hey, it's time for Truth About Markets. Max and Stacy are back in London. Stacy, is it snowing? What's going on?
Calm or lagged? We're jet-lagged. Jet-lagged, baby. It's like, it's really hard coming this way. And so, we may be doing the show right now, we may not be. We're all having hallucinations. And there may be capital controls in Europe, and there may not be. In Cyprus, you know, they're having this bizarre sort of meltdown.
Yeah.
And I was reading a piece on Gollum, you know, that site Gollum Vix or something like that.
For the first time.
Yeah, well, they go through the fact that everybody is suddenly shocked about this deposit levy that was first proposed for all deposits, whether you had 100 euros or 100,000 or 100 million euros in your bank account.
Yeah.
And now it emerges, if you look back through various documents over the past few years, actually, you know, the UK actually has this plan, Spain has this plan, and New Zealand has introduced this. So this is the new normal, thanks to our bankster occupied economies.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is that there's not enough growth to pay the debt. You know, there's not enough taxable income to pay off the debt. So they're just going to take it.
You mean there aren't enough peasants to support the few hungry lords we have?
Well, the peasants, you know, the peasants are going to stay, but the debts have been accumulated for 40 years, and during some years the economy grew faster than the debts were growing as a percentage of GDP. In some years, that's not the case. But since 2007, the debts have been growing at a rate faster than GDP. And so now we're at a phase where the idea of hoping for a rebound is past. So now the debts are being paid by just confiscating wealth. So it's tough to convince people to work hard to pay enough, make enough money to pay off interest when they are simultaneously trying to hang you. You know, there's social unrest is here. So it's hard to manage an economy if the people are in revolution. And it seems though people are now, the social unrest is now growing.
And of course they're openly saying we should start doing this to Italy. We should seize 15% of their bank accounts. Same thing is coming for Spain, because they already changed their constitution to allow the confiscation of so-called insured deposits. You know, they tell you that your deposits are insured up to 100,000, but apparently the small print of your constitution, as I said on our show today, is that it's not actually there. You don't actually have that. So nothing is sacrosanct for the bottom 99.9%. Only the contracts with those top 0.1% are sacrosanct, actually.
Yeah, it's the bottom 100%, because people with the money are invisible. It's in the shadow banking system. So it's the bottom 100%. And I see that there's a political party in Germany that's growing, that is a radical party. There's obviously Italy has this guy Pepe Grillo, whatever, who's a radical departure from their normal political thing. So, you know, this is what happens. You have people coming into power, and you head toward some radical, crazy stuff. It's all very predictable, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, of course, there were some radical parties that emerged in the 1760s, 1770s, when their wealth was confiscated. People didn't like it. And, of course, there was no democracy at that point. You couldn't elect these radical leaders of yourself that you wanted to govern. And so you had to overthrow these invisible monarchs. But, you know, the same thing now, because, of course, you can't elect the people you want to govern you. You see that from Palestine to Greece to Europe, across Europe, and in America. You know, Ron Paul is an example of you weren't allowed to elect him. And so we're at the same sort of, you know, the people haven't realized that yet. And so it's interesting times.
Right-o. But the trend toward just taking money out of deposits is growing. I would imagine it's going to keep growing because the debts are continuing to grow much faster than anyone's income. So it seems like there's a standoff. The people who have something to protect are now at odds with those who want to take it. And so this rift is growing. It's getting more tense, isn't it?
Well, the point is, by the way, to Resonance 104. See, I have jet lag mouth. To this Resonance 104.4 FM audience, Max Keiser did warn you here first in October of 2005 with his REFCO warnings, because at that time it was that was the first big shock, by the way, in the global financial system of this financial crash. That was October 2005. And what had happened is 2 months earlier they went public. This was a decades old commodity and futures broker, and they went public August 2005. Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, First Boston, and Bank of America took them public. Grant Thornton reviewed their books for the previous 4 or 5 years. Everything they said was, you know, tip top. And in fact, the whole company was backed by $525 million in fake bonds resting in some offshore tax haven in the Caribbean. And 400 million stolen from an Austrian pension fund. That was what collateralized the whole company. But so what happened when this company went bust suddenly in October 2005 is they did seize segregated client funds, including Jim Rogers' account. And I remember at the time you were so shocked, and you said this was just the beginning. And you said, you know, the global derivatives market is $250 trillion. Mm-hmm. The global GDP is $40 trillion. So imagine those numbers, because now the global GDP has risen by 50% since then. Mm-hmm. And yet the global derivatives quadrupled in that same time.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So you have the reason why they're now confiscating bank deposits. Because up until recently, they could do the old trick of repackaging securities and increasing the maturity. And that's been going on for 40 years. So it's the extend and pretend. So if you have, let's say, Resolution Trust Corporation, which was created after the savings and loan scandal of the 80s, they took all those bad debts, they put them into this trust. They refinanced them so that they were due not in 10 or 20 years, but in 30 or 40 years. And then they slowly worked through it over 40 years, whatever the time was. And that's been the technique for 40 years. But that you need a lower interest rates to make that work. And we've just transitioned from a 40-year period where rates are trending lower, that for every time you repackage the bad debts, you could simply extend the maturity and no one would have to pay any penalty. Now we're in a period where rates are flat to rising. So that trick is not available anymore. So you have to actually pay the coupon. You actually have to pay the interest payments. But there's no job growth. There's no income growth. So the only thing left is to just take it from the depositors.
Yeah, so that was the first real-world example of REFCO 2005. And what happened was the funds that got seized were the billionaires like Jim Rogers. And there was that other big guy, Lee, somebody. His last name, Lee.
Bruce Lee, the karate artist.
No, but so obviously their money got quickly returned. I don't know where they took it from. I guess those Austrian pension fund holders. But, you know, obviously they realized that once this whole derivatives bubble starts exploding all over the world, they're going to have a more equitable way of taking the wealth, i.e. not from the billionaire class, the invisible class you talk about, but from the normal people. And the other thing is what you're seeing in Cyprus in bold is that thing you call interest rate apartheid, because here you have the bondholders, and bondholders get paid for taking risk, for lending to these banks and the government. And they're getting paid for their deposit, essentially. You get paid nothing. 0% interest rates. All these depositors in Cyprus banks were getting nothing. And mm-hmm. their funds are now being seized. But the bondholders are continuing to be made whole. There's a bond payment coming up, I think June 6th or June 3rd. And they're going to make that bond payment.
Yeah, that's right. So if you make a loan to the bank and you loan money that you borrowed from some other bankrupt bank that is collateralizing that loan from making a borrowing from another third party that's also bankrupt, there's no interruption in your payments. You're going to continue to get income. But if you actually put money in the bank that you save from working hard, then that's going to be confiscated to pay the interest on the bond that has been collateralized by borrowing from bankrupt institutions that are collateralized by bankrupt institutions. So, I mean, a great example of this is the IMF. You know, the IMF 5 years ago, 6 years ago, was almost bankrupt itself and was probably going to be dismantled, shuttered, taken offline because it wasn't nothing, there was nothing for it to do. But then this crisis hit. And suddenly everyone wants to use the IMF as a strongman to go and rattle people's cages and get payments on phantom bonds. So they're back in business. And but if you have actual savings that you accumulated through actual work where you actually produce something that would actually create economic growth, then you're considered in this interest rate apartheid era as an underclass, as an untouchable, as somebody that should be quarantined into the ghetto and abused. And so this is what I've been talking about.
Yeah, so we've been talking about this for a while. You know, prepare for this, from whether it's buying silver or gold or Bitcoin is a way to, you know, step outside that the financial system where this invisible class rules, and they can seize your wealth at any deposits you allegedly have, any, you know, so-called euros or dollars or pounds in your bank account. And the remarkable thing is, you know, the likes of Bloomberg and CNBC and Fox Business are now reporting on Bitcoin, because what they've seen is becoming increasingly clear, especially in Europe, as these capital controls are introduced. There's a huge surge in purchases of Bitcoins. Last week, there was one buyer of $1.4 million worth of Bitcoins. And, you know, they're trying to get outside the system where wealth could be seized. Because right now, as we speak anyway, you know, the levy on the deposits on these Cypriot bank accounts is either going to be 0%, 1%, 7%, 9%, 10%, 15%, 20%, or 40%. So why people just sit there and take it, I don't know. And why people say, oh, Bitcoin is the one that you should fear. Keep your money in euros. How are you going to convert it to euros? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the verbiage that they use to describe this confiscation of wealth is funny. You know, there's a Cypriotic government minister talking about a donation made by the citizens to the government. All kinds of words fly around, and the funny thing is, of course, that whether it's people say, oh, you know, there's no inflation in the economy, so the policy of quantitative easing, It's not creating any inflation, so therefore it's working. But it is creating wealth confiscation and a transference of hundreds of billions of pounds. I just read in the Telegraph yesterday a report that there's been 200 billion pounds lost from quantitative easing. Now, this is a new report, a new piece. I just read it in the Telegraph yesterday. It's an excellent piece. I saw in the Economist magazine a few weeks ago that the amount of money saved by interest rates being forced down is about 70 billion pounds on interest. So for every pound that people are saving on their mortgage, the economy is losing 3 pounds of income. So is there any wonder that the economy is not growing? I mean, this is what this journalist was saying in the Telegraph is that George Osborne, when he's up against Ed Balls, the shadow chancellor, in these House of Commons debates, his objective is to just make Ed Balls look dumb. His objective is not to actually talk about these issues in any substantive manner. And then he likened George Osborne to basically a backgammon player, because George Osborne apparently is an avid backgammon player. And he talked about the relationship between Osborne's debating in House of Commons with the shadow chancellor and his techniques as a backgammon player. But the bottom line is that he totally ignores, and no one is talking about, this very critical underlying fact that for every dollar saved in interest through these radical measures of forcing interest rates down to unnaturally low levels, you lose 3 pounds in income. I mean, that's why the economy is capsizing. That's why the rating agencies are going to downgrade the gilt again. This is why you don't have any growth. So, but he won't talk about it because it gets back to what you were saying a minute ago, which is that it would mean have the bondholders possibly losing money, the phantom bondholders. And these phantom bondholders are Osborne's constituency. They're not the workers, the savers, the population, the bottom 100%. He works for the invisible 0%.
Yeah, and I assume that Telegraph piece came from Save Our Savers, which they actually looked at the data, and we reported on this for today's Kaiser report, where they found that 220 billion pounds was lost to savers and pensioners, because basically half of it came from just outright not being interest paid on your savings, because the average rate now on a savings account is something like 1.4%. And prior to quantitative easing, it was 3.5%. So on the $1.1 trillion in savings, they reckon that was something like $100 billion lost. And then the other bit was on inflation, and the way they calculate inflation for pensions. So there was less... You know, they understate inflation so that they have to pay less to pensioners. Mm-hmm. So that was $100 billion lost as well. So that's 20% of your savings there. That's 20%. 220 billion is 20% of a $1.1 trillion. So that's the deposit levy here. People don't seem to care. They've been compliant and saying, well, the government and the central bank will take care of us. But you know, that's what probably a lot of Cypriots thought, and that's what a lot of, you know, Europeans are thinking right now, and they keep their money there in their bank thinking, well, they're going to take care of us, and they love us.
Right.
We love them. We all love each other. But it's going to be confiscated.
So there's a deposit levy in the UK of between 3 and 4% right now, and has been for 5 years. So over 5 years, that's 15, 16, 17%. Now, what's the deposit levy in Cyprus? They're saying, oh, it's between 7 and 15%. So it's about the same, because all these banks are connected at the hip through the central banks, through Bank of International Settlements, who manages all the invisible phantom bonds and derivatives for the top 0% that doesn't exist. And now that they have interest payments due and the bond markets are no longer in a bull market, they have to just take it out of your account. So that's what they're doing. Now, people are understandably upset, and they are in the streets. They're protesting. They're, in some cases, rioting. This makes it difficult to get people to organize to be involved in work programs, because they're fighting the tear gas. So there's a bit of a difficult measure there.
Well, just on my tweet stream right now on the feed, it's just saying that now they're proposing a 25% levy on deposits over 100,000 euros. So again, you know, they keep on changing the game. Somebody out there already knows the real number. You know, the invisible class knows what the real number is. They're just doing this to confuse. This is like, remember we were watching that program about con men on the street?
Yeah.
How they confuse a drunk.
Right.
They go up to them and moves back and forth with them, and they destabilize the drunk man and then pick his pocket.
Yep.
This is what they're doing here with 0%, 1%, 2%, 7%, no 40%, no 10%. Don't worry.
Right.
And here, that's the equivalent of you like being rocked back and forth, the drunk on the powers of the central bankers, and they're picking your pockets while they're doing this to you.
Yep,
that's right. It's usually a two-man team. So here you have the IMF is is on the lookout. And then the person doing the pickpocketing is the government saying it's 1%, 20%, 2%, 20%. And they're just picking your pocket. And that's right.
And it's coming to you because, of course, also on my home feed of my tweet stream, Twitter account is from the Greek paper Ekaterini Syriza, you know, that big party, left-wing party, Tsipras heads it.
Yeah.
Says Cyprus is just the guinea pig for savings haircut.
Yeah, that's right. They're just testing out to see, you know, they want to see what the pushback is, and they want to see how disturbed people become, but you know, the Cyprus situation, of course, opens up another kind of interesting front in all this crisis because you know, as people have been discussing, it's where Russian oligarchs keep a lot of their money. Now there's a big move out of those banks by those oligarchs, so it's tough to know exactly what's in the banks, to what extent the Russian oligarch class would be touched by this. But nevertheless, there's people in there who are not going to like having 25% or 5% or 10% or 7% of their money taken by these folks, and these people are not just garden. They're not just little people necessarily. They're people with resources, people with means, people with very very bad dispositions who might not like what the, you know what I'm saying? Like they might act out on that.
Well, I just don't think, you know, I think that, you know, how I was saying how they're trying to destabilize you and confuse you and make you feel drunk about the changing the amount that they're going to take from your accounts. I think this Russian oligarch thing is also part of the propaganda, because I don't think any billionaire worth his billions has his money still there. I think they've been warned. I think the invisible class knows that this deposit levy was coming. So, you know, the oligarchs own all the most expensive properties in London and New York. They're the same ones. You know, an article on Bloomberg was talking about how basically the oligarchs are kind of laughing this off because they've already taken their money out. And they talked to some basically London and New York based oligarchs. So, you know, they knew this was coming. So their money's not there. So that's why they're going to have to take essentially 40%. It's always the highest number. That's what they really want. Just like we said on our show that it's $100 trillion that they already tipped us off. That's how much they need to make good on this error account, the global error account of derivatives. Well, the amount they need to take is 40%. And why do they need to take 40%? It's because all the billions from the oligarchs is gone. So they need to take it from the peasants. If the oligarchs were still there, the levy would only be like 5%.
Right. So once again, the workers, the savers, are going to be penalized. And I would have to say that's an accurate description. You know, now over the past few years since we've been doing this show, you know, 2005 we talked about Revco, right? So now we're in what, 2013? So that's 8 years. Now during those 8 years, they've only talked about three things. Gold in British terms, British pound terms, is up more than 400%, close to 500%. Silver up, I think, close to 600%. And we've also talked about Bitcoin, which is up, depending on when you got in, between 700 and 1,000%. So here you have three options that we talked about. The crisis I mean, as we've always said, there's two. The crisis cuts two ways. It's terrible for one group of people that are stuck in certain investments and certain things, but for those who are clear about what's happening and can see what's going on, I mean, you're going to make a fantastic opportunity, as you have with gold, silver, and Bitcoin. So we also said that you should not short the euro. A lot of people were shorting the euro. That was a losing trade. We said don't do that, that the euro was fine. And we also said to, get out of the British pound. British pound has hit new lows, new all-time lows against the dollar recently. So, I mean, I think that needs to be said. I mean, there's human nature is never going to change. You're always going to have stupid people with guns doing stupid things. But, you know, question is, how do you live among, when you have to live amongst armed stupid people, unfortunately. So you just have to have a good strategy, I guess.
And that includes armed with financial weapons, which are the most deadly, I would say. Because as you covered on the Kaiser Report with Paul Moore, you know, he reckons millions have been killed, their lives have been shortened because of this financial crisis. And so the crisis is still here. In the meantime, you know, the SFO has just ended their an investigation into, you know, they can't find any evidence of any fraud or any scams by any British-based bank. In the meantime, this week, the one country who had a similar situation to what is in Cyprus and to what happened to Ireland, and that is their banking system became 10 times the size of their GDP, and it became that big because of fraud, because of banksters lending to each other to buy the same fake debts. Well, that was Iceland. And Iceland this week has indicted the former CEOs and senior executives. Not the small change, not like what we do over here in the West, like, you know, Jerome Kerviel or the guy from UBS in London. It's not the little rogue traders. That's what we like to do over here. No, they went after the CEOs for market rigging. And market rigging because they lent money to each other to keep the shares high. Mm-hmm. Just like they did in Ireland, and nobody went to jail. Just like they do here, just like they did with LIBOR, nobody goes to jail. So what do you think of this?
Well, a couple of points. You know, first of all, you're saying the SFO, Serious Fraud Office, hasn't found any banks guilty in any fraud. Another way to interpret that is that it's even more troubling, problematic than if they had, because what they're saying is then because the economy is shrinking, they're saying that the way credit and banking is organized in this country doesn't work because it doesn't generate growth. It doesn't generate economic growth. It doesn't generate jobs. It doesn't work. It's like saying that, I can't think of a good analogy at the moment, but they're saying, the SFO is saying that the way business is organized in Britain today doesn't work. So, I mean, that it would be better if they found something wrong with the bank that committing fraud and say, well, they were committing fraud and we need to correct what they're doing, you know, legally speaking, because they've committed fraud. And this is in part why things are slowing down and not working, why money's being stolen. So they'd say the system has integrity, and here's a bad player in the system. We're going to penalize them. We're going to make that correction. But by saying across the board they don't find anything wrong with the banking system, then they're indicting the entire economy and saying the post-war British economy is not organized in a way to generate a viable quality of life. So, and I would agree. And that's why you see this country going through what it's going through with its complete political gridlock, the banksters running amok, and just things are just riots, whether they were in London, just a year ago or so. That's not a one-off. That's the new normal. But there's no way to get around it. So that's really, really sad. Now, in Iceland, another island in the European zone, they have apparently it's run by women who have a little gumption, who are saying, "Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. We know that the system inherently is okay. It's that these bankers that ripped us off, they're the problem. So we're going to go after the bankers that ripped us off." As a result, their economy is growing. They have integrity. They have dignity. They have self-respect. The people, they don't care, walk around with their heads held low, reading page three of some Murdoch paper, praying for something to come along to save them. No, they have self-respect and integrity because they said, you know what? We're not the problem. The banksters are the problem. And the results are predictable. They have a growing economy and they have respect.
Yeah, and they return to, well, we already have our little people up here. These bankster tricks, that's just magic. That's just fairy tales. Let's go back to fishing and doing, high tech stuff and genetic research and stuff like that. The fish have always been there and taken care of us, and that's a respectable job. This whole fake selling collateralized fake bond products, that's for the little people.
Well, I think that the outsourcing of jobs to Asia is just it doesn't really make a lot of sense when corporations and banks are hoarding cash. So here in Britain or in America, jobs have been outsourced. They say we need to be competitive. At the same time, they hoard hundreds of billions of dollars and pounds in cash. Well, that should have been the wages for these people doing the things that these Asians have done right here in Britain. And with those wages, they could have been now buying stuff and the economy would be growing. But because those banksters who have outsourced everything to either computers, robots, or Asians who are hoarding the cash and then gaming the system so that the central bank gives them even more cash for like funding for lending schemes, where they in turn do not re-lend it out, they just hoard it again, you end up with the worst of everything. You have no jobs, no savings, no interest rates, no political leadership, no self-respect. Oh, wait a minute, that sounds a lot like Britain. Yep.
Yeah, well, actually the cash pile being hoarded in the US is $2 trillion, which again, that's that deposit levy. That's the equivalent of a deposit levy. That's how much has been taken because of what the US economy is allegedly 14 trillion. So there you have it. That's a bit of a deposit levy. It's a wage levy. And of course, of that 2 trillion, 140 billion is from Apple alone, and Moody's was just looking at their books and saying that if they don't spend any of that, and if they don't reinvest or pay dividends, then that cash hoard by the end of this year is going to be 170 billion. And where is it? Actually, I'd like to know if any of that 140 billion is in Cyprus, because they keep it in offshore tax havens.
Yeah, it's mostly offshore. But here again, you have a situation of a company flagrantly breaking the law. It's against the law to hoard cash like that on your balance sheet. By law, companies who have shareholders, in this case, Apple shareholders, have to either invest that cash or pay a dividend. It is essentially against the law to hoard cash. Now, of course, laws don't matter anymore, and if anyone called them on it, they would change the law, break the or have a new law, and so there's no rule of law, and that doesn't apply anymore. We're in a post rule of law era. There to begin with, why people thought it was necessary to create that law originally, because you don't want companies with shareholders to simply hoard cash. It's not in the interest of the shareholders, who would either want a dividend or have that money reinvested. So it's the same across many of these corporations around the world. They're hoarding cash, and at the same time, the governments are stealing cash from depositors, where obviously, if they wanted to raise some money, they would simply commandeer the cash on the balance sheets of these corporations that have been caught breaking the laws over and over and over again. So here you have again, it's an apartheid situation. if you have political influence like Apple, you can hoard $170 billion in cash and break the law. But at the same time, people who live in the community where Apple is present and who purchase Apple products are going to have their savings confiscated or commandeered by corrupt political people to satisfy these phantom bondholders.
Yes, but Max, like I said, you know, the laws may have been changed because you just assume because it hasn't been made public that all these laws are the same that they always have been. But, you know, going back to that article that Gollum the 14th wrote, Plunderball, the new Euro banking game, he writes about the UK-US changing how your deposits are treated, okay? Back in December 2012, the FDIC and the Bank of England published a joint paper outlining their new approach for how to resolve any future collapse of one of the too big to fail banks. The paper is called Resolving Globally Active, Systemically Important Financial Institutions. The paper is the blueprint for how collapses at what it calls G-SIFIs, i.e. Global Systemically Important Financial Institutions, get used to this term. It will figure largely in your life and future, whether you want it or not, but how they will be dealt with in the future. They write, the UK has, it's section 34 of the paper. The UK has also given consideration to the recapitalization process in a scenario in which a G-SIFI's liabilities do not include much debt issuance at the holding company or parent bank level, but instead comprise insured retail deposits held in the operating subsidiaries. Under such a scenario, deposit guarantee schemes may be required to contribute to the recapitalization of the firm. So, Gollum says, what it's saying is that the money that the deposit scheme contains, instead of going to you, could now be used, read, would be used, to bail out the bank in order to prop it up. In other words, the new system makes the deposit guarantee fund available for use as bailout money.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, so, again, just inching toward a situation of feudalism, essentially. You have no job, no wage, no savings. You know, the thing about having savings is that you become politically independent. You're not forced to vote for the guy who will steal less of your money, according to that equation. Having financial independence, it means you have independence. It means you're free and independent. You can vote according to your conscience. But if you have a gun to your head and a hand in your pocket, you really don't have the freedom to vote the way you want to vote. So they're overriding this whole idea of representational democracy. They're going to push it until somebody gets hurt. And I think that day is fast approaching. There's going to be some Russian guy who's not going to be happy about this one lick, who we may see some nasty bits happening. Or you could see that happening across the board. Now, what's the response going to be? It's going to be stupidity. Now, again, this is forcing people into Bitcoin, and Bitcoin is stateless and bankless. And, you know, you made the comparison earlier to BitTorrent and what BitTorrent did to the motion picture industry and the MPAA, Motion Picture Association of America. You know, Motion Picture Association of America has become a jackbooted bunch of thugs who hound people to death, as was the case with Aaron Swartz. So, I mean, now banks, if you interrupt their free flow of free cash from a corrupt government, they're going to be all in your face.
Yeah. And, well, okay, a few things to respond to, because first of all, the BitTorrent and Bitcoin people tweet me or leave comments on our site all the time saying, oh, the governments are going to stop Bitcoin. And then what happens? I'm like, yeah, just like they stopped BitTorrent, right? They've made all sorts of laws, created all sorts of police forces around the world, passed all sorts of laws and prison sentences of 30, 40 years for people downloading stuff. And yet, go to Pirate Bay, go to any of the torrent sites online and see how badly that's been impacted, how people are really stopping using it.
That's an excellent point.
And then the other thing is you were talking about, you know, when what's going to be the breaking point, who's going to rise up. But, you know, the genius thing about what's going on now is we all know, first of all, most youngsters in the West, anybody under 40, really doesn't have any sort of stable job. They don't have any savings. They don't have much equity in their housing. They have huge student debts. So they don't have any savings, and all these wealth confiscation schemes don't matter to them, right? Because there's nothing to take. They can't. You can't take blood from a stone. However, it's the old people. The old people do vote more, but they're also feeble, and they're more desperate to, first of all, be taken care of by the state for their health problems as you get older. And you're just more feeble. You need more help from the state. That's when most welfare from the state. And, you know, in America, they always paint all the welfare bums as being these, you know, like young black women who are plundering the state. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, most of the welfare budget goes to old people and usually old white women. That's those are the biggest users and consumers of state services, mostly because of Medicare. Now, that which is the health care. And it takes that also pays for and Medicaid, which pays for their old folks' home. But so those people need the state. So on the one hand, their pensions and their savings are being plundered, but they're also in a state assisted living facility or state assisted healthcare facility. So, you know, it's a well devised system, I'll say. It's almost like Satoshi engineered this global plunder system. It's so brilliant.
Well, the architecture of the economy is built with the blueprints and the mortar of cheaper interest rates. But now the cost is going up because rates are going up. So the architecture of the entire system is falling apart because it's not built to sustain a rising in interest rates. It's not sustainable. So
yeah, but that's the young people, the sort that congregate and rise up and overthrow corrupt governments or corrupt financial systems. Well, those are the ones that need the cheap interest rates. They're the ones in debt. So that's the thing. If that's what governments are striving for, to keep interest rates low, that's the audience they're targeting. They're concerned about the young people, the virile, you know, robust, strong people who they don't want to be too desperate.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, it also seems that they just don't want anyone having any independence because if you're in government, you don't want to be voted out.
Yeah.
So the one way to make sure that you don't get voted out is by impoverishing everyone and making them debt slaves. I mean, okay, let's look at North Korea as an example. You know, it's funny how it seems like the British government and the American government aspire to be North Korea, and they would love to be North Korea. Here's a guy who threatens atomic attacks all the time. Of course, that's a lot of fun. If you're a power-mad psychopath, you love to get on the news and threaten atomic bomb threats all the time. What could be more fun? Your people are completely enslaved. There's no chance you'll ever be voted out of power. It's the job for life. You get to just take what you want and beat people up whenever you feel like it. It's the perfect job for the psychopath. And this is what politicians in Britain and America aspire to all over the world. That's their role model.
You know, we watched Midnight Express last night. And one thing I realized, it's funny because, you know, that's based on a true story from 1970 where an young American guy strapped 2 kilos of hashish to his body and tried to fly home with it. And he got caught and got trapped in this hellish justice system and the brutal prison system of Turkey. And, you know, he ended up being sentenced to 30 years for this 2 kilos. And, you know, the film is very much saying like, what? Like, how insane is this? This is like, for what? This is not justice to sentence a man to death, essentially, for trying to smuggle 2 kilos just for his personal use. Well, I was saying to you, you know, this should be remade for the modern day. Not only is America now the one that does this, because back in the 70s, this was before the war on drugs really you know, you could see all the charts of how the prison population has exploded since the 1970s. It was Richard Nixon who first uttered the words war on drugs. And back then, of course, you know, American justice system looked like the epitome of justice and the place you would want to be caught if, you know, you were going to be smuggling drugs. But here you get, like we said, 30-year sentences for downloading academic journals. So that should be the new Midnight Express, this kid who downloads some academic journals and gets sentenced to this hellish justice system, a very precarious and random and arbitrary, just like the young guy in Midnight Express faces. And it's a genuine outrage to see how fickle it was in Turkey. And here the same thing. It's just... prosecutors, what was the phrase? Even Eric Holder used it about the prosecutor, the attorney general in Massachusetts, that this was their prerogative. They could determine whether or not they wanted to pursue somebody really hard like this.
Yeah, that's right. Billy Hayes, the kid who gets sent to the Turkish prison. And I remember seeing the film when it was first, you know, out there. I guess it was in the 70s or early 80s. And, you know, you're thinking about, oh, my God, those prison conditions, that's so incredibly harsh. But now you look at it again and, you know, the people living in that Turkish prison are enjoying a better quality of life than millions of Americans right now who are living in squalor, with completely cut off from anybody, with just holding on to their guns. And I think it would be an upgrade for them to be sent to a Turkish prison like that. That would be a nirvana for them. So things have certainly changed in terms of what the lifestyle that you would find as a common lifestyle. And Aaron Swartz is the new Billy Hayes, basically, except he didn't make it. He didn't catch the Midnight Express. Chris Dodd over there at the MPAA, he had his way with him, and now he's no longer living.
Yeah, but that is the Midnight Express and the gulag system, because, you know, not only is the American justice system now as fickle and crazy as the Turkish one, but it's more vengeful and nasty and brutal like the Soviet gulag system. So you have the two of them working together. It's like the worst of the Soviet. They looked out into history and said, what's the worst of the worst? What are the worst elements we can take and apply it to our system rather than the best? They wanted to see what was the worst and the most brutal and the most violent and the most dictatorial. And they chose those ones. So I'm surprised, you know, I hadn't seen Midnight Express in about 20 years. So seeing it was just so shocking how much that could be the U.S. now.
Yeah, that's right. It's just a justice system that's completely out of control and random, and it's just people getting sent away for 30 years for minor offenses. That's what you see in the U.S. all the time now, and it's driven a large part by the copyright industry. And as you point out, BitTorrents are not going anywhere. So it's a losing battle for them. Bitcoin, similar to BitTorrents, it's not going anywhere. It's going to be a losing battle for anyone trying to take it on. And I saw a story about how 3D printing is now going to do to the patent system what BitTorrents have done to the copyright system. So 3D printing, it made it down to the South by Southwest Festival this year, made kind of a splash. It is now here. And this is going to challenge the patent system. So the intellectual property business, which Thomas Jefferson thought was a bad idea to begin with, 240 years later, is finally, you know, coming under review again. And I don't think there's any place for intellectual property as such, handled in the law. So now it's being upended by. But it's a medieval fight, isn't it? Because you had in the medieval days, you had the church controlling everything, and then came the printing press, and now in this day and age, you have the Wall Street Washington Axis controlling everything, and along comes BitTorrent, Bitcoin, and 3D printing.
So this is really rich here. This is from the Telegraph headline. Take a pile of euros and watch out for thieves. Foreign Office tells Britons going on vacation to Cyprus. Easter holiday makers planning a trip to Cyprus have been told by the British government, take piles of euros with them and watch out for thieves as the country faces financial meltdown. Now, they're referring to the, you know, the peasant sort of hungry person on the street taking a few bucks from you, a few euros. They're not talking about the banking system, the ECB or the IMF. So it's very rich for them not to warn them about them.
Yeah. Then if you take a pile of euros and whatever you do, don't put it in the bank.
Yeah. Or avoid Christine Lagarde. If you see this woman walk very far away, walk to the other side of the street.
Yeah. The least safe place you could put your money is in the bank, because the bank is now an open conduit to the financial terrorist class.
Well, I think it's pretty shocking. But Russia, so one scenario, I wanted to see this thing here. Russian investors will lose heavily in the plan, which sees a 10% tax on all deposits. Every article has a different levy. 10% on this.
Let me talk about this word tax for a second, because the money in the bank has already been taxed.
Yeah.
Okay. You made your money, that you got a paycheck. The government took out something called tax. What's left over, you put into your bank, and that is your savings. So you can't say, we're going to tax the money. No, no. You already taxed the money. This is wealth confiscation. So let's stop the charade of using the word tax. Tax is not the right word. Tax has nothing to do with this. This is wealth confiscation. The confiscation wealth, that's what it is. It's not tax. Don't use tax. It's just insulting. Again, use of words like it's a donation, it's a tax, it's a levy. No, it's a robbery.
And then, of course, see, you know how they get you to go against your principles, to go against the notion of a republic or a rule of law, is they look at one group, whether it's, you know, a very heinous group of people like child molesters, and say, look, if we have rights, then these people have rights, and they're so heinous, they can't have any rights, so let's remove our own, and you end up doing that. Well, in this financial world, what we see happening is they're saying, look, there are Russian oligarchs there. This is why they're doing it in Cyprus first, I think. Is they're saying, look, do we really want the Russian oligarchs to get away? Like, don't you want to take their money? Let's take 40%. That's what this article says, that those who have invested more than 100,000 euros in Cyprus' most troubled banks lose up to 40%. They're saying the Russians. They were saying, you know, that there's a nonstop propaganda campaign in the, especially in the British press, against Russians. So you're like, yeah, let's take their money. So they got you. This is how a con works. They got you to be the one to suggest it.
Mm-hmm.
You're the one that are saying, yeah, take their money.
Mm-hmm.
So the principle has already been violated. You're the one that said, let's violate that principle. Because in this case, it's okay. Just like in the U.S. In this case, yes, let's get rid of habeas corpus because them damn Islamists.
Mm.
And then now it's gone, isn't it? All those habeas corpus rights and due process gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Americans are the ones that were on Fox News screeching and on CNN screeching and on MSNBC screeching that these people are beyond any rule of law. So we can't have a rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing here. So as soon as you're in your mind, you say, well, they're Russian and they're Russian oligarchs, so let's just take their money. That's why it'll also be imposed on you one day and it'll be too late.
Yeah, it's scapegoating. You know, it's classic, right out of the pages of propaganda ministers of yesteryear. It worked then, it works now. Just scapegoat and steal. Scapegoat and steal. SNS.
And the funny thing is, of course, is that, like we said earlier, the multi-billionaire Russian oligarchs have already got their money out, by the way. They've already been warned. But you're screeching out there saying, yeah, take their money.
Well, what will happen is, you know, to pay for this, you know, Abramovich or whomever here in the UK will raise the price at the Chelsea Football Club. So next year you're going to be paying 50% more to go to see the football match because these Russian folks have to make up that money somehow. You voted to have it stolen. Now you're going to have to pay them one way or another. It's all works out in the end, but not for you.
Well, there's no way he's having any of his money confiscated. But, you know, the fact is you have voted for the confiscation. Probably not the truth about markets audience, of course, but the general you out there that they have said, OK, it's OK to take because it's just Russian oligarch money. But at the end of the day, if you ever actually did an investigation, what you will find is that all the only people that have will have had their money confiscated in Cyprus will be the average Cypriot, the average British retiree there. It'll be normal people. It won't be the oligarchs, trust me.
Well, that's true. And so you have Italy is now teed up for some kind of what they call a haircut or a wealth grab. Yeah. Spain also looking similar. So I guess once they set the precedent for this Cyprus where they've successfully grabbed deposits, confiscated wealth, then they're clear to take that to other countries. I think that's the plan, right?
Yeah, I would think Spain and Italy are next in line. Now, Reggie Middleton, and we only have like a minute left, but Reggie Middleton was also warning on Kai's report that there's some major fraud going on at European banks, and he's going to reveal this information in the next week or so.
Oh, boy.
I reckon it's probably French banks that he's talking about.
Could be, you know, they're you know, French people love to steal. That's part of their national heritage, and they don't really see anything. That's not really a crime in France. You know, the neighbors stealing stuff. It's just they don't really look upon it as theft. So, I'm sure that they're caught up in some stuff. We haven't heard really from them banks and French banks in a few couple of years. They had James Kerviel, Société Générale. There was a scandal with BNP buying Fortis Bank, and there's an accounting fraud there. But other than that, they've been quiet for a couple of years. So it's their turn to reveal some major problems. Yeah.
Well, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. We're back in London where it's snowing and back from New York.
Okay, bye, y'all.